We're having our second class on the Jewish home. And the title of our class is, It is a Popularity Contest. It is a popularity contest. There's a question I like to ask whenever I'm giving a class to married people. And it goes like this. Imagine your spouse just got an email from his boss or her boss telling them that tomorrow afternoon they can leave work right after noontime. They can eat lunch and leave. They're not needed for the afternoon. They have the afternoon off unexpectedly. And imagine that you are home tomorrow without anything too important to do. You have time off. So you have tomorrow off, and your spouse just got an email telling them that they have tomorrow afternoon off, or that they will be getting off of work tomorrow 2 hours earlier. What do you want your spouse to want to do with those hours? Everyone wants their spouse to want to spend those extra free hours with them. And how often does the spouse tell themselves, I'm not going to tell anyone. I'm going to go do what I want during that free time. I'm going to go watch a baseball game. I'm going to go visit my friends. I'm going to go for a walk or a stroll in the park. I'm going to enjoy my free time. I'm not a sucker. I'm not going to tell my spouse about it. I'll go have a good time. Excuse me. I thought having a good time was with your spouse. Yeah, sure, we go out on dates, but this is my free time. Excuse me? So this goes back to our title tonight. It is about popularity. We let our guard down at home. That's normal. You're at home. But we also let our guard down in the sensitivities we should have and in the care we should be taking to be popular at home. Do you walk through the front door and the kids come running to you, Abba! Do you walk through the front door and your spouse is happy to see you? Well, do you want your spouse to want to spend their free time with you? We all have time we spend together. What happens when we have extra time? Imagine you're given the option of going on a vacation. Do you want to go alone or do you want to go with your spouse? Well, that sort of depends on how annoying your spouse is to some degree. Well, it goes both ways. How annoying are you? How pleasant is it to be with us? Well, if we would ask ourselves this question over and over again, is it fun to be with me? Well, we'll start seeing very interesting things. Some people say, oh, I'm a kvetch, which is another way of saying, I sap other people's strength by expressing whatever is dissatisfying to me right now on the scene. So they'll say, I'm a kvetch. I'm a whiner. I like to complain. You're sapping other people's strength. Can I be a source of positivity at home? Of happiness at home? If people are happy to be around me, so then they'll want to be around me. Can I commiserate? You walk in, you're all happy. Your wife's had the hardest day of the year. You walk in and you're all smiley, and your wife is like, oh my gosh, I can't believe the day I just had. So you've been in your world, she's been in her world, now the two worlds meet. Well, what do you do when your wife wants to share with you what a horrible day she's just had?
You gonna sit down and listen?
hopefully. Or you're gonna say, give me a minute. I just walked through the front door. Don't bombard me right now, which is another way of saying, I'm still happy. Don't share with me your problems just yet. How popular are we at home? which is another way of saying how much am I willing to conform to the needs of my spouse. There was a very important word in that sentence, conform. Yeah, conform means I match myself to her. Now, ladies, you don't belong there listening to this class. It's not fair, because women take this as though I'm only talking to the men. No, if I were talking to women, I'd also tell them they should conform to their husbands. In marriage, we all have to try to make our piece of the puzzle fit to the other piece of the puzzle. And they don't fit. It's work to make them fit. It doesn't just happen. Naturally, it's difficult. It's like, we got the wrong pieces, they don't match. No, you got the right pieces and they will match. You got to conform. So to conform means it doesn't jive with me right now. It's not what I want to do right now. It's not how I thought marriage would look like. And marriage is never what you thought it would look like. Never. Guaranteed. Guaranteed. It's not going to be what you think it's going to be. It could be much better, but it naturally starts off much worse. And if you work, I'm making it good. So then it becomes much better. Much better than you imagined. But you gotta make it there. I had a funny thing. One child said a Dvar Torah, and I kept eating the food. So another child goes, Abba, what do you think of that Dvar Torah? I said, I don't know. He said a nice Dvar Torah. So the kid goes, no, Abba, you don't like what he said. Why don't you like what he said? I didn't say anything. Excuse me, what's going on here? They read minds? The answer is yes. The people who are close to you, they start understanding what you're trying not to show them. So, this happens to me all the time. My kids are like one-upping me. I don't even say anything. I put my head into the food. I didn't want to say anything when my son said that. The kid sang a Dvar Torah, and I'm not so happy with it, but I don't want to tell him that, so... I just thought, very nice, I'm eating my food, I'm not saying anything. And the other kids are, Abba, what bothered you about that? Kid came home and started saying in Dvar Torah about why it says in one parsha, your ox or your donkey. I said, okay. And then I said, okay, who has another Dvar Torah? So the kids got upset at me, Abba, why don't you like that Dvar Torah? I said, I didn't say I don't like it. He said a nice Dvar Torah that an ox represents Yosef and a donkey represents Yisachar. Very nice. So they said, no, the look in your eyes, Abba, says you don't like it. I said, I didn't say anything. Leave me alone. And the kids are, no, Abba, 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 why don't you like it? So they cornered me until finally I said, okay, I'll challenge you. How many times in Torah can you find that it says an ox or a donkey? So each one grabbed their Tanakh to see who could find more, and within 10 minutes they had found over 100 places that says an ox or a donkey. I said, you see, throughout Torah the examples are an ox or a donkey. When it says keep Shabbos, it says your ox or your donkey. When Yaakov Avinu is coming back to the land, his ox or his donkey. When Yaakov Avinu sends gifts to Esav, he says oxen and donkeys. This is the Torah's example of domesticated animals, oxen and donkeys. So now one out of 100 you're going to start telling me, oh, over here the ox represents Yosef and the donkey represents Yisachar. Okay, you could say that, but when you see that it's a classic example throughout Tanakh, then you sort of stop and say, really? When Isaiah wants to rebuke the Jewish people, what does he say? The ox knows its master and the donkey knows where to get its food. Those are the classical examples in all of Tanakh. So why should we choose one and start saying, ah, over here the ox represents. And what does it represent everywhere else in Torah? So, but I wasn't going to tell my kids that. But suddenly they know what I'm thinking without my saying anything. Well, that's what, when you develop a relationship, so suddenly you know what one another is thinking before you even say it. But that takes years to develop. It takes years to develop, but suddenly you discover things that you weren't even planning on in your relationship. So marriage can get to places that are much better than what you imagine. But when you first step into it, it's much worse than you ever imagined. And what you tell yourself is, oh no, oh no, this can't work. So we have to know, I don't remember, I heard this line from a Rav on 613.org. He gave a share on marriage, someone from South America, I don't remember his name. And he said, people have to know that marriage is not a disease. People think that love is a disease. How so? You fall into love, you fall out of love, it's like a virus. You caught the virus, you got cured from the virus, Well, no, love is something you build. And one of the keys to building it is your popularity matters. It matters whether your wife likes what you do or not. When a guy tells me, I drink and my wife doesn't like it, so I'm not talking about the fact that it's not a good idea that a Jew should drink. It's not what a Jew should be doing, as it says in numerous places in Tanakh and in Halacha. But if his wife doesn't like it, so that's another good reason not to. So a person will say, but I've been doing it for years. Okay, so get help, work out of it. What did we just say? It's going to be about conforming. If I want to be popular, I have to figure out what my spouse needs or wants and conform to it. That means I won't be able to do what I'm used to. Here's another classical example. What do men come home to when men come home? So if men walk into marriage the way the average man does, then they want, in big letters, there's this Reader's Digest article about how to be a good wife. And it says there, your husband's worked very hard. When he comes home, the kids should be bathed. Supper should be hot and ready on the table. Make sure things are pleasant and calm when your husband comes home. Be a loyal and faithful wife. Keep the kids quiet and let him enjoy the beautiful kids you've been raising. Show appreciation for all the hard work he does for you to be able to have such a beautiful house. That's what every man on some level imagines. But what is man really coming home to? You're coming home to your real job. What you do out of the house is your fake job. What you're doing out of the house is your supportive role. That's how you're going to fund your real job. But that means you get ready to come home. Don't walk through the front door and say, I'm tired. No, you get ready. You're coming home. That's it. You got to deal. You got to do dishes. You got to do laundry. You got to help the kids. You got to do homework. You got to sit down and tell them a bedtime story. Wait a second. I worked really hard all day. When I come through the front door, all I want to do is sit down and relax. Excuse me, I'm coming home. No, dear. You're coming home to work. Most people on this planet, most people, the most substantial thing they do their whole life is the house they built. For most people, they will never do anything more substantial with their lives. I ran a successful shoe store for 40 years. Good for you. I was a great plumber for 40 years. I'm sure you cleaned a lot of toilets. It's very good. I'm not belittling the job. But you know what? I think the world would have managed without this plumber and had another plumber, without this repairman and had that repairman. So we all do our job faithfully. We help the world function. But what's the really important thing we do in our life? It's our kids. It's our home. That's what's important. It's what we do with humanity. And the people you should be investing most in, your family, your own kids. But if you look around the world, that's not what the world looks like. Great people are not people who have a reputation for being family people. Benjamin Franklin had children all over the world because he was a womanizer. So he had children in France, he had children in England, he had children in the United States, all over. George Washington's next door neighbor went back to England because he couldn't know if his children were his or George Washington's. He couldn't keep his wife at home. So he packed his bags and moved back to England. You should start, I don't know if you should, but there are books called The American History that they don't teach you in schools. Historians have been writing all kinds of interesting books on the stuff they leave out of the history books. Like the story that Helen Keller's life doesn't end where the books like to end them. Helen Keller became an extreme leftist, supporting communists. Helen Keller led a very productive life for decades that no one tells you in the history books because it's not politically correct to talk about this ardent communist called Helen Keller who fought the American government tooth and nail. So they don't bother telling you that. They don't tell you a lot of American or world history because it's not politically correct, like the idea that there were many people who found the United States before Christopher Columbus. Many people from Norway, there were whole tribes that came to the Americas beforehand. But Christopher Columbus. Okay, so Christopher Columbus. We won't discuss what Christopher Columbus did with the native women or what Abraham Lincoln told his men when they conquered the South about how they could treat the women of the South the extreme savagery which was permitted under Abraham Lincoln, or the fact that Abraham Lincoln would travel a lot because he just couldn't get along with his wife. Abraham Lincoln would always be traveling. When he was a lawyer, he was theoretically traveling under the job. And then when he became president, he was traveling because his job demanded it. So he couldn't stay at home with his wife. But who cares? He did emancipation of the slaves. Abraham Lincoln, the father of freedom. Really. He wasn't such a good father. He wasn't such a good husband. So in Judaism, we don't look at the world that way. We don't say, oh, he was an amazing person, but at home he was a pretty lousy parent. We don't say that. We say the first gauge of a person is at home. There's a man whose book we learned tonight, a very big tzaddik, who's reputed for building a sukkah. And as he's building the sukkah, his wife comes out and says, why are you building it there? And he says, that's where we built it last year. And she says, I think it's better on the other side of the yard. So he goes, I'm almost finished. You sure you want it on the other side of the yard? She says, yeah, it's much better on the other side of the yard. So he takes apart the sukkah he's almost finished building and goes to the other side of the yard and builds the sukkah. He finishes building the sukkah and his wife comes out and says, you know you were right. You know where you were right. The other side is better. I want you to take apart and rebuild it on the other side. Now pause for a moment and ask yourself, how would you react?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
How would you react?
Count to 10.
Look at those tzitzis. So he calmly went and took apart the sukkah and rebuilt it on the other side of the yard. Could we do that? It is a popularity contest. Raising a home is about caring that my wife loves me, that my wife likes the type of human being I am. It is a popularity contest. Men get stuck up with the idea of what's right. I'm right. I offered it to her. And she said, build it on the other side. So I don't have to build it the way she just said. I listened to her the first time. So you're right. You can be right and destroy your marriage. There's an amazing story in Talmud. Hold onto your seatbelts now. There was an amazing couple. The wife, she was sharp as anything. When the rabbis in Mishnah would have questions, she could wipe the floor with them. She would come into the academy sometimes and correct the greatest of the rabbis. Her father was Rabbi Hanina ben Tradion, the great sage who was assassinated, murdered by the Romans, tortured to death. She grew up in this fantastic, pious home. And her husband was such a genius that if people only looked at him as he was teaching, they would grow. And one day a conversation breaks out between the great Rabbi Meir and his amazing wife, Bruria. And Rabbi Meir says, Nashim daitan kala. Women, they can be seduced. Their minds can be made to change. You can convince them. There's a difference between men and women. And Bruria says, me? No. Excuse me. I can never be seduced. And my mind cannot be changed. Now, Bruria is quoted in Mishnah and Talmud. Bruria is quite a lady. If we're talking about an awesome, amazing, sharp, brilliant, extraordinary woman, Bruria is there. So Rabbi Meir takes a student and tells him, I want to teach my wife something. It's Talmudic. It's Torah. Might seem strange to you, but I want you to try and just go over and be very sweet to my wife. And then tomorrow I'll tell you how to be sweet again. And he guides the student day after day after day until finally the day comes where Rabbi Meir tells the student, you've built up your relationship with her. I'm going to be hiding in the bedroom. You come in and tell her, you know, you're so amazing. Bruria, seduce her to the bedroom and then bring her to a point where she's ready to transgress with you, I will walk out of the closet. All I need is to show her that the Talmud was right. The Talmud said women can be seduced. So the student says, Rebbe, if you're telling me, I'll listen to you, fine. He comes to the house, Rebbe Meir is hiding in the closet. The student has been sweet-talking Bruria over a long period of time. And finally, they walk into the bedroom. And it's very obvious that Bruria is ready to do what she should rather give up her life than do. And Rebbe Meir walks out of the closet. And he says, Bruria, now do you understand? Bruria looks at him. Bruria looks at the student. Bruria understands she's being set up. Bruria goes and commits suicide. And that's the end of Bruria. And Rebbe Meir has destroyed his life as well. He lost his wife. He is so embarrassed by what he did that he leaves the whole area, all the rabbis, all his friends. He has to go into exile. But he was right. And he proved it to her that he was right. He was just teaching her something. And if ever there was a wife who was so logical and so powerful and so capable of understanding that right is right, it was Bruria. But in life, you can't just work with right and wrong. Marriage is not about right and wrong. In marriage, we have to ask ourselves, am I popular by my family? Is my wife happy to have me around? Am I pleasant to her? Doesn't matter if when I come to yeshiva or work or everywhere else, people love me. What matters is, what do they say about me at home? What do they think about me at home? We gauge a person first by their popularity at home. Everything else to us is secondary. The first question, they quote a Zohar, that when a person passes on, he's going to be judged by his wife. They're going to bring his wife's soul in to judge him. That's what they say. Don't ask me why I don't learn Zohar. But the idea, the concept that you're first tested by what type of husband were you? What type of spouse were you? So that's a phenomenal challenge. And it means that when we approach marriage, we're approaching with the idea, I can conform. I can be popular by my wife. And even though I'm going to think, what's wrong with her? Why does she want? Why is that important to her? We're going to discuss crazy needs that women have. They're not crazy. They're just different. So to us, they're crazy. I gave a group of men the responsibility to make their wives happy. I said, your homework for this week is to take 25 minutes and talk to your wife about nothing. Can you do that? Right? Hi, how are you? How was your day? What's new? What's doing? And what happened with schmooze? Be female-like in your conversation. We're just talking. It doesn't matter. I don't know. What do you want from me? You want me to be a female? I want you to be popular. I want you to be liked at home. That means conform. I can't just be myself. I'm not walking into my castle. I'm walking into my main job in life when I walk home. My main accomplishment in life is hopefully going to be the home we built. So that's our perspective to be continued. Be'ez Hashem next week.